Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
America, I gave my best to you.
Yeah, we're going to give it our best, too. This is Wiggins America, where we always give it our best. I never mail it in. Hopefully, though, even when I do, the best that I can give you is better than the best that the current president has given you, because I think you've seen the evidence of what his best looks like. It's just amazing to me that when we're listening to these speeches, and I have no idea whether you've paid attention to the Democrat National Convention this week or not. I realized on probably Tuesday night that I'm sitting there watching at least some of it. I wasn't watching the whole thing, but I was watching the Obamas speak, and I'm trying to at least catch the headlines and see the highlights. And my wife is in the other room, completely oblivious that it's even happening. And I'm realizing I don't really think people are paying that close of attention to it anymore. Maybe back in the days of big TV, you know, where everybody, it was like, I kid you not, 99.7% of American households tuned into TV every day. This was, you know, 15, 20 years ago, but it was for decades and decades that those stats were true. If you wanted to reach America, you did it through TV. Well, that's not true anymore. I don't know what the stats are, but I know that most people still have a TV, but whether they have live TV and they're participating in live TV is a very, very different thing. You can stream these things, which is what I was doing, but you got to be much more deliberate. You're not just like flicking the TV on and, oh, it's on. You're going to see a little bit of it every night. It's just not happening anymore. And the same is true of the Republican National Convention. The difference is that that was right after, I mean right after, the guy was almost shot in the head. So people were seeking it out. You want to know, like, what's going to happen? And they announced the vice president that Monday. I mean, it was like boom, 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 all this stuff happening. So there was a lot more attention on the RNC than I think the DNC. And I'm watching some different polls and things, and you know how I watch polls, but it's not that I love polls so much as I love data. I just love finding out, what do people think? What are the betting odds, for instance, you know, crowd sizes and stuff. That stuff does matter. And all of it is data. Polls are data. There are betting odds that have been really making the rounds. I'm not sure why people are focusing more on the betting rounds than are polling. The polling is showing a little bit of a dip too, but, and that's weird because the DNC usually gives them a bump, but the betting odds have really flipped. And usually that's not going to happen during your party's platform. This is your chance to make your case. It's glitz and glamour, especially with the Democrats. There's lots of celebrities, and it's not happening this time. In fact, the reverse has been true. The betting odds has actually moved in Trump's favor throughout this thing, and Republicans' favor in general. But all that aside, the opening segment here that I really wanted to do is about the crazy, hypocritical statements that I was able to pull from this week. Now, this isn't all of them, but I led with Joe Biden saying, I gave you my best on purpose because it's so funny and so backwards from reality. Well, I guess, I mean, if that's your best, maybe it is his best and he's just that bad. But do they not realize what they're saying when they say it?
Would be able to weaponize the Department of Justice to go after his political opponents. He could even turn the FBI into his own personal police force. That is not how it works in America. That's how it works in dictatorships.
Now, this is a state senator from Michigan. They must think highly enough of her to grab her from Michigan and say, you're speaking, because she was the first day. And she's talking about how awful it would be and how dictatorial it would be for a sitting president to use the Department of Justice to go after a political opponent to accomplish his own goals. That if we ever were to see a administration use the Department of Justice in that corrupt way, that would be an indication that we were moving away from democracy and toward totalitarianism. Again, the point of this segment is to point out, do they know what they're saying? Because we've debated, maybe they do know and they don't care. And they're like, yeah, we're doing it. How do we hide that we're doing it? Oh, we'll say that the other side's doing it, even though they're not. It's amazing in that clip, though. Donald Trump, here, I'll play just the beginning of it again, just to be clear on what the point she's trying to make.
Donald Trump would be able to weaponize the Department of Justice to go after his political opponents.
The irony is not lost on you, I don't think, when you hear a clip like that. Donald Trump is currently being prosecuted by the Department of Justice. But her warning is that if he's elected, he could do what is being done to him. Of course, they leave off the part where we're currently doing this to him and only project he could do this. So he may not do this. He could do that. I don't have any idea. I doubt that it'll look like this because the media wouldn't let him get away with something so brazen as is currently happening in the United States. I hate to tell you that I agree with her that is an indication of dictators. That is what dictators do. They weaponize everything so that they can stay in power. It's just disappointing. It's so obvious that as I talk about it, I get angry at myself for talking about it because I don't need to make the point. Like, you saw the point 3 minutes ago, and I'm still talking about it. But it's a national platform, and it's part of the Democrat National Convention. How could they not see that? That's what's frustrating. Not to be outdone, Michelle Obama. So it's not just like this random person, but it's not just a random person because they bring him up on stage. Michelle Obama had this to say.
We don't get to change the rules, so we always win. If we see a mountain in front of us, we don't expect there to be an escalator waiting to take us to the top.
No. Again, are they completely unaware of the irony of these statements? Once again,
we don't get to change the rules, so we always win.
We don't get to change the rules so we always win. You're supporting a candidate on stage who got zero votes because you changed the rules so that you could win. I'm so sorry that I'm bringing this up. Like, oh, it's hypocritical. Well, politicians are hypocritical. But it's so, so in your face. Because I'm shocked that they don't care about Republicans. I'm shocked that Democrats don't hear that and go, ooh, well, maybe not exactly that. Because that's the audience, is Democrats. They're really not even pulling middle in this thing, based on the numbers I was giving you at the beginning of this segment. But and I'm going to play one more context clip from Michelle here, because this is right before she says this.
We don't get to change the rules, so we always win.
So right before that, she talks about how she, and really she's talking about black people in this clip. The reason that you know that it's black people, she doesn't say black people are blank. But right before this, she's talking about affirmative action and how people of color need a leg up. And then she says this.
If we bankrupt a business, or choke in a crisis, we don't get a second, third, or fourth chance.
Okay, she's talking about black people or people of color, either one, versus white people. So, first of all, she loves racism. The Democrat Party loves racism. That's why they bring it up so much. They're very, very racist, and they embrace it, especially the people at the top. They love racism because they can give speeches like this and make you feel a certain way because racism conjures up emotion. Listen to the clip again, though. What is she saying? When she says we, she's talking about black people.
If we bankrupt a business, or choke in a crisis, we don't get a second, third, or fourth chance.
Now, I am a white person who owns a business. If I bankrupt my business, what she's saying is that because I'm white, I will get tons of chances. And I don't know what chances mean. It's deliberately vague. You can't pin anything down. So if I bankrupt a business, I guess I get to go in and go, you know what? I really spent your money poorly, bank. But I'm not going to pay you back. Is that okay? Like, I don't really want to go through this whole process with you. And they would go, well, you know, I don't want to say this, but because you're white, yeah, we'll just kind of forgive this. I'm really offended by this stuff, because what do they think that I am, that I'm just like, oh, well, I've got all this privilege. I can just do whatever I want. I can bankrupt a business and I have no consequences. Like, have I not worked to build this either? It just frustrates me because they're trying really hard to pin us against each other. And I have nothing against many other people who I know who run businesses, no matter what color they are. I don't care. I don't expect to get any sort of special treatment, and I'm not sure they do. I think we're all trying to make it in a bad economy, and it just really angers me that you have, you know, roughly 45% of the country that votes for this. I mean, they're just going to vote for it no matter what. They don't really care. They don't care what the last 4 years have looked like. They don't care about democracy, although it sounds nice to say they're going to save it. You know, they don't really care. These kind of things are intended to be divisive. And so you have an entire party that's built on divisiveness, the divisiveness of anything they can find, whether it be race. And if race didn't work, they'd just move to the next thing. And the next thing has been sexuality lately. And they'll use anything they can to drive wedges between people and make certain people feel like they have so much more advantage than this other group. And the other group needs to vote for me because bad guy exists. And bad guy could be anything. Right now, it's straight white men. And you cannot do anything right if you're a straight white man, because apparently you can bankrupt businesses left and right and you're fine. Like, I don't know what reality that is, but it really pisses me off. I didn't expect to go there. Sorry. You know, usually we like to keep it light, like to keep it fun, informative, but at least light. And that just made me mad. All right, let's take a short break. This is Wiggins America.
Error 404. Humorous tagline not found. Wiggins America.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here, did you watch any of the DNC at all?
No, I've been avoiding it like a plague.
So you could have watched it and chose not to.
Correct.
Because I don't get the sense that this has moved the needle much. And from the amount that I watched it, now the first two nights I watched mostly in short bursts or in clips afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday night though, I watched a good hour and a half of it because I felt professionally obligated to sit and actually try to watch this thing. Now, there's no way I was going to catch the whole thing. These things are long.
Yeah.
And not just what's on TV is not the whole convention. I'm learning this. Mm-hmm. And I think the RNC is the same way, where they have speakers like all day and they have 40 people that are going to talk each day. And I guess they're trying to give everybody their moment in the sun, mostly their politicians.
Right.
Although I saw on Wednesday, the night, day I was watching, I saw that Kenan Thompson and Mindy Kaling, both celebrities, did something. And I'm like, this didn't even make any like clip news. Like, it didn't even register at all. But I guess my question for you, Roy, is in light of the Obamas speaking, which I think was probably the highlight of the whole thing. And when I say highlight, I mean that was probably the best moment that the DNC had, was the Obama speaking.
Yeah.
Because both of them are pretty good speakers. And I'll say this before I get to the Obamas. The hour and a half I watched, I didn't really see a bad speaker. They were good. If you're in the room, you weren't going to be like, oh gosh, this is so stupid. you were going to be like, oh yeah, you know, like it moved, it was entertaining, it was a little long, but it moved. There was, though, no real substance once you walked away. In the moment, you could kind of be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep going back to this week and thinking about all the different DNC stuff that I've consumed. And obviously, we're probably more than the average person just because of what we do. But I get the sense that the major issues on Americans' minds, they did not address at all.
I agree with that. I haven't watched any. I've read headlines of people who watched it.
You've consumed it the same way that most people consume it.
Right. And it the way it comes across to me is they are doubling down on the far left progressive agenda. You know, the abortion, immigration, all of the things that they're just so out of touch with, I think, what a lot of people really care about. But I guess they're sticking to their talking
playbook
points because they got nothing else to talk about.
That's the only thing I've come away with it, too. And I have not seen a polling bump from the DNC. Usually, I mean, almost exclusively, you always see a bump. And then it kind of fades. I'm not seeing anything. And I think it's because it's been pretty vapid. And not because there hasn't been any substance. I want to make that clear. There has been substance to some of these speeches, but they're much more painting people in certain lights. Tim Walz,
right.
Kamala Harris, and some of that is important to do. Like, you know, if I'm going to vote for Donald Trump or if I'm part of the RNC, my job might be to get up and tell a personal story about Donald Trump. One time when I was really destitute in 1995, Donald Trump saw my story in a newspaper and he came along and he actually paid my rent for a year. What a nice guy. You know, that's not policy, but that does have to happen at one of these events.
Yeah.
That stuff paints a picture. That's what it's for. But you do have to, at some point, talk about something. And that's been my issue.
Right.
And I go back to the Obamas here and I just want to get, you know, we don't have to spend forever on this. But the Obamas really bothered me because they are really good speakers, and they legitimately have achieved a lot. And kudos to them. Two-term president, you made a ton of money, you're super popular, you're all over the world, you're like Bono. Like, I mean, really, there's not a whole lot of bigger names in the world that everybody kind of goes, oh, wow, they're here? Oh, they're staying at the same hotel as my uncle? That's a story, you know, that stuff. But they, mainly Michelle, but Obama did this too, Barack. They talked about how tough it is for them and for black people and for just they tried to draw as many lines as they could and said, here's what people in power do. Here's what we've had to do. And the we isn't necessarily the Obamas, but it's we Democrats, we people of color, we homosexuals, transgender, whatever they can come up with, right? That was a part, and they would use affirmative action. Like, they would say it and say, that's why these things are needed. They would talk about generational wealth and all these dog whistle code words that they say, oh, Trump uses code words all the time. Mm-hmm. Man, there was so many code words in that thing, I couldn't even hardly keep up with them. And they're all about drawing these divisive lines and saying, here's you guys, this is the power people over here, and here's us. Is that lost on America, that this is one of the biggest rock stars in the world, making Netflix movies, they're doing everything? There was a story recently, and this is within the last year, I think Mark Cox himself was a part of this story, so I think it had to do with when he was on a European tour, that they passed something, and I hope that I'm telling the story, I hope it's him, because this is vague in my mind. They were somewhere in Italy, and they found out that, oh, we can't go to that part today because Barack Obama, Bruce Springsteen, and Steven Spielberg are all going to be there, and it's a big to-do, and you want to avoid that today. Like, that's in Italy. These are Americans. They're world-renowned. Nothing is tough for them.
Right.
And yet, they're barking about the people out there who are oppressing you. I apologize for taking this segment and completely talking and not letting you talk, but I'm just getting going here, and I'll just leave it there, and you can have the final point.
Well, I agree with you. I think one of the comments that I read after the fact was that, you know, Michelle Obama is talking about how hard it is to be a black person, and she owns four houses and is a multi-millionaire. This may not be where you wanted it to go, but I would push back a little bit on your, they're rock stars. I think there's a perception of that, but if you think about it, it's not about any achievements that they've done, because there's lots of ex-presidents who don't have the cultural, you know, phenomenon associated with them. It still comes back to the fact that it's a bunch of liberals with white guilt wanting to be next to the guy who they were able to show the world they're not racist because they voted in a person of color into the White House. So I think, yes, he's a good speaker, but, and he was president for 8 years, but there's a lot of people who have been president and who are good speakers, who don't have that kind of cultural thing
associated with them. But regardless of why, the fact is that it exists. Now, I don't know.
But it exists because they're pandering. Everything you described about what they said is pandering to white liberals. They're not going to win over any black people by saying, look at me, a multi-billionaire, a millionaire who has struggled so hard. He hasn't struggled a day in his life.
Well, that's my point. And I don't know whether they have struggled. Maybe they did before they became, you know, very, very wealthy, famous politicians. But my point is, they're definitely not now. And to try to make the case of, like, class warfare and them against you, they're at the top of the hierarchy.
Right, but that appeals to other white people who are also at the top, who want to look down upon minorities like they need our help. There's like, it's like my brother texted me the other day. He was driving through St. Louis, somewhere near Clayton, and there's all these senior citizen white liberals out with Black Lives Matter sign. There wasn't a person of color anywhere. And so that makes them feel good about themselves. And that's, not only are they living as white liberals, they're pandering to white liberals.
And with a lot of privilege.
Yes. So the whole thing is disingenuous. And I think the majority of people who aren't part of that upper echelon of the white liberal progressives see through it.
Rocket in my pocket, I am that glad to see you. Wiggins, America.
Tomorrow, well, everything's okay. New buttons on the jacket, shining like the brand new diamonds. Listening in the sunlight, blistering my eyes. When you said that you loved me, I knew it wasn't true. I've 100 unread.
You know how if you were in high school or college and somebody walked, usually a little earlier than that, it would be really lame if you were in college and this happened. But if a girl walks up to you and goes, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I'm not interested in dating you. You'd be like, it hadn't crossed my mind. Like, just wanted to make sure that you knew that me and my friend Carly, we're neither one of us are interested in dating you. We don't talk about you all the time. You'd be like, I don't know what that means. You'd think, I think maybe those girls really like me. They're putting on a bit of a show to tell me that they don't. I got the same kind of feeling from the DNC this week. I don't know about you, that they were really good at putting on a show, but they were doing it so that you'd go, man, those are great vibes. In fact, it seems so electric. And they had to tell you over and over and over how electric everything was.
And it was though someone had plugged in a cable, a current was connected, and there was pure electricity in the room.
Thank you for sharing with us some of the electricity.
The energy is incredibly electric.
You know, it was just electric.
As sort of electric as mm-hmm. I've ever seen it. It was absolutely electric.
Talk to me about the atmosphere in here. Is it electric?
Excitement, babe. It is electric.
Senator Schumer wasn't lying when he was saying that there's a lot of electricity and excitement right now.
So it's incredibly electric.
It's electric. Something just got uncorked.
Room in Chicago, quite electric tonight.
Last night was electric.
It'll be electric.
Electrifying.
The electrification.
There is electricity in this room, there is energy in this room, and there is enthusiasm in this room.
A lot of electricity and energy in this hall across this country like you've never seen.
Not even with Barack Obama in 2008?
I think this rivals Barack Obama in 2008.
Okay.
I don't know, man. It's a lot of people saying the same thing. Feels like they're trying to convince me of something. Of course, my criticism has been all week, and not just me, but most people on the right have said, nobody's questioning whether or not you're good at putting on a nice, polished show. You had really good speakers. They're good at executing emotion and driving engagement. That's what you do. You're the left. You're Hollywood. But it didn't feel like, and I go beyond feeling, you didn't say anything. You just gave us good vibes. And I don't really believe you anymore, because whenever people start saying the same thing, either a memo has gone out from the White House to the media or to other politicians to say this over and over and over, which does happen, or people hear other people saying it and they kind of parrot it. And I think both of those things are happening. But when you know they're lying, because things like sharp as attack would have been, you know, a month ago, it would have been, no, Biden's fine. He's super sharp. And then they all would have repeated it. I'm not saying that did happen, but let me see if I can find them saying that Biden was sharp.
This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever.
He is sharp. He's on his game.
His mental acuity is great.
This is a very sharp president.
And the people that I've talked to say he's as sharp as a tack. He's fine.
They say he's sharp.
There's not a problem.
He was sharp.
He was sharper than anyone I've spoken to.
The president is sharp and he is tireless.
He is sharp.
As sharp as ever.
And he's fine. All this right-wing propaganda that his mental acuity has declined is wrong.
Oh, shoot, that seemed to have been all lies, but we should believe them now. You know, that was a long time ago. That was like a month ago. They've changed everything now, and they're only telling us the truth now. Let's talk about RFK a little bit, eh?
Wow, Wiggins America.
Just want to take a second here. We're going to talk about RFK in a minute. I haven't left myself a whole lot of time to talk about the endorsement itself. He kind of buried that endorsement if you listen to the whole speech. But we'll talk with Old Roy a little bit more about RFK. He has read his book. He is more into RFK than I have been. But man, I'll tell you what. I listened to that whole speech. Well, I shouldn't say the whole thing. He went a little longer than we were able to carry. But listen to 45 minutes of his speech in which he said he is A, suspending his campaign. So not ending it, but suspending it, leaving his name on in blue states and red states, but taking his name off in 10 battleground states and throwing his support behind Donald Trump. Vehemently said he disagrees with Donald Trump on several key things, but he said we align a lot more than we don't. And he went in talking about the corruption of the Democrat Party, of the media, of the government itself, in ways that you would expect. But it's just like when you talk to your buddy about fishing and he goes, yeah, I went out there and threw a few lines in there. Well, what'd you catch? Well, here's what I got. Got a couple of these. Versus when you talk to Bill Dance about fishing and he goes into some super detail about it. That's what it's like to listen to RFK talk about corruption. It is impressive. And he has a voice, no pun intended, because I know he has a tough time speaking, but he has a voice that needs to be heard throughout our government. I say put basically every regulatory agency that exists, if Donald Trump wins, put it under RFK, because that dude is about reform and he knows how these things run. Listen to some of that speech, and I dare you to find any speech from the entire DNC that has a quarter of the substance that his little speech was. I dare you. We'll talk more about RFK in a second.
Kentucky and sail to the west. Stop in Cincinnati. Dine with all the best. Reach the Mississippi. Took another new entry. Fell into a maiden's arms. Malaria on your lips. When you say that you love
Wiggins America. Fibrosis with the Mostis. Wiggins America.
A little behind the scenes here. About a year ago, maybe more than that, the book The Real Dr. Anthony Fauci had been released by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and it kind of put him on the map, at least as far as I think middle America is concerned. He's been a D.C. guy for a long time, and Old Roy is here. Do you remember that we actually had RFK booked to be on Wiggins America?
Yes.
And about 15 minutes before he was scheduled, and we had to record it, you know, we had to be in his schedule. I'm like, it's fine. We're small potatoes. And at the time, he hadn't announced anything. So, I knew, oh, if we can get this guy on, I don't think it'll be the last time we ever hear from RFK Jr. So let's get him now before he gets real big. And you had read the book, so I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. So about 15 minutes before RFK is scheduled to call in and be on the show, his publisher contacts us and the PR team or whatever, and they go, he's going to have to back out. And I knew at that moment, I think they knew this the whole time, that they'd reel you in with, hey, you can have RFK Jr. on your show. Well, now you can't, but the publisher can be on.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh. So we totally took it, hook, line, and sinker. We took the publisher. It was a good interview. It was long. I mean, we talked about the real Dr. Anthony Fauci, which is what put him on the map.
Yep.
But you've read the book.
Yes.
So now, in light of the week's news, just a real quick hit on what do you think about this guy, RFK?
Well, I've got mixed feelings, and I've had arguments with friends and family who are conservatives who think of RFK as the kooky environmentalist, anti-vaxxer.
Yeah.
But if you read the book, he makes it very clear in the book that he's not an anti-vaxxer. He's an anti-untested vaxxer and an anti the methodology that they use to push vaccines through. Anyway, different thing. We covered that already. Politically, I think he's more of a classic liberal, and that'll never change. But he has an opportunity, and he's been taking advantage of this, I think, in recent months and since he decided to run for president, that he's got the attention of some of the people on the right now because he was right on COVID. And so a lot of conservatives aren't diehard, never go against the party line. We're open to reasonable people talking about things without having to go all in on their political stance.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
And so I think the opportunity that he's been working on taking advantage of, or he should be if he's not doing it consciously, is that he's got a captive audience now on the other side. So there's an opportunity to bring the left back to a more classic liberal, which is where I think he lives and where he thinks the party should be. It's less about endorsing one side or the other and more about, can he save the party from itself?
Democrat Party?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, that's why you're here, is to give these crazy takes that nobody else is giving. I will say this. The thing about RFK that does fascinate me is that he represents this entire faction of people now, and hopefully these people are now going to switch to Trump. I mean, we'll see. But he represents this entire faction that they might still be pretty socially liberal, but they're like the classic anti-establishment people.
Yeah.
And that's why you have Tulsi Gabbards and people of that nature who are classically Democrats in policy position, but they're just anti-establishment. They don't trust the establishment. It's like the hippie generation. And you're like, that's Republicans now. And so we almost can set aside policy differences because we're focused on a bigger problem, and that bigger problem is this big monolithic establishment that exists not just in America, but it's like the entire Western world. Mm-hmm. There's this thing that does not want to be disrupted. And the Republican Party sometimes is a part of that thing. But right. Donald Trump is not. And everybody knows that he's not. And RFK is not. And Tulsi Gabbard is not. And a lot of random Republicans, many, 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 many more Republicans are not a part of that than Democrats. And the Democrats who are not a part of that thing have become, I'm not really a Democrat anymore. So there's a big, interesting cultural, political shift that's happening that I think he represents, which is why I think he's fascinating. and glad to have him as part of this discussion now. But before we get to the end of the show, I wanted to leave a little bit of time here because we haven't done as much comedy, Roy.
Huh.
And I got the opportunity on the Annie Fry show to randomly play. It wasn't like a great venue for it because it was so sudden and random. But I had created a song a while ago. It was a challenge from somebody, I think it might have been Annie, but I don't remember because it was so long. It was like 6 or 8 months ago, to make a country song that was also...
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Set foot in America one fine autumn day. Sailing into Baltimore, well, everything's okay. He buttons on your jacket, shining like the brand new diamonds. Glistening in the sunlight, blistering my eyes. When you said that you loved me, I knew it wasn't true.
You know how if you were in high school or college and somebody walked, usually a little earlier than that, it would be really lame if you were in college and this happened. But if a girl walks up to you and goes, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I'm not interested in dating you. You'd be like, it hadn't crossed my mind. Like, just wanted to make sure that you knew that me and my friend Carly, we're neither one of us are interested in dating you. We don't talk about you all the time. You'd be like, I don't know what that means. You'd think, I think maybe those girls really like me. They're putting on a bit of a show to tell me that they don't. I got the same kind of feeling from the DNC this week. I don't know about you, that they were really good at putting on a show, but they were doing it so that you'd go, man, those are great vibes. In fact, it seems so electric. And they had to tell you over and over and over how electric everything was.
And it was though someone had plugged in a cable, a current was connected, and there was pure electricity in the room.
Thank you for sharing with us some of the electricity.
The energy is incredibly electric.
You know, it was just electric.
Sort of electric, as I've ever seen it. It was absolutely electric.
Talk to me about the atmosphere in here. Is it electric?
Excitement, it is electric.
Senator Schumer wasn't lying when he was saying that there's a lot of electricity and excitement right now.
So it's incredibly electric.
It's electric. Something just got uncorked.
Room in Chicago, quite electric tonight.
Last night was electric.
It'll be electric.
Electrifying.
The electrification.
There's electricity in this room, there's energy in this room, and there is enthusiasm in this room.
A lot of electricity and energy in this hall across this country like you've never seen.
Not even with Barack Obama in 2008?
I think this rivals Barack Obama in 2008.
Okay.
I don't know, man. It's a lot of people saying the same thing. Feels like they're trying to convince me of something. Of course, my criticism has been all week, and not just me, but most people on the right have said, nobody's questioning whether or not you're good at putting on a nice, polished show. You had really good speakers. They're good at executing emotion and driving engagement. That's what you do. You're the left. You're Hollywood. But it didn't feel like, and I go beyond feeling, you didn't say anything. You just gave us good vibes. And I don't really believe you anymore, because whenever people start saying the same thing, either a memo has gone out from the White House to the media or to other politicians to say this over and over and over, which does happen, or people hear other people saying it and they kind of parrot it. And I think both of those things are happening. But when you know they're lying, because things like sharp as a tack would have been, you know, a month ago, it would have been, no, Biden's fine. He's super sharp. And then they all would have repeated it. I'm not saying that did happen, but let me see if I can find them saying that Biden was sharp.
This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever.
He is sharp. He's on his game.
His mental acuity is great.
This is a very sharp president.
And the people that I've talked to say he's as sharp as a tack. He's fine.
They say he's sharp.
There's not a problem.
He was sharp.
He was sharper than anyone I've spoken to.
The president is sharp and he is tireless.
He is sharp.
As sharp as ever.
And he's fine. All this right-wing propaganda that his mental acuity has declined is wrong.
Oh, shoot, that seemed to have been all lies, but we should believe them now. You know, that was a long time ago. That was like a month ago. They've changed everything now, and they're only telling us the truth now. Let's talk about RFK a little bit, eh?
Wow, Wiggins America.
Just want to take a second here. We're going to talk about RFK in a minute. I haven't left myself a whole lot of time to talk about the endorsement itself. He kind of buried that endorsement if you listen to the whole speech. But we'll talk with Old Roy a little bit more about RFK. He has read his book. He is more into RFK than I have been. But man, I'll tell you what. I listened to that whole speech. Well, I shouldn't say the whole thing. He went a little longer than we were able to carry. But listen to 45 minutes of his speech in which he said he is A, suspending his campaign. So not ending it, but suspending it, leaving his name on in blue states and red states, but taking his name off in 10 battleground states and throwing his support behind Donald Trump. Vehemently said he disagrees with Donald Trump on several key things, but he said we align a lot more than we don't. And he went in talking about the corruption of the Democrat Party, of the media, of the government itself, in ways that you would expect. But it's just like when you talk to your buddy about fishing and he goes, yeah, I went out there and threw a few lines in there. Well, what'd you catch? Well, here's what I got. I got a couple of these. Versus when you talk to Bill Dance about fishing and he goes into some super detail about it, that's what it's like to listen to RFK talk about corruption. It is impressive, and he has a voice, no pun intended, because I know he has a tough time speaking, but he has a voice that needs to be heard throughout our government. I say put basically every regulatory agency that exists, if Donald Trump wins, put it under RFK, because that dude is about reform and he knows how these things run. Listen to some of that speech, and I dare you to find any speech from the entire DNC that has a quarter of the substance that his little speech was. I dare you. We'll talk more about RFK in a second.
Stop in Cincinnati, dine with all the best. Reach the Mississippi, took it up the new entry. Fell into a maiden times, malaria on your lips. When you say that you
love Wiggins America.
A 400 net message, and a single note from
Fibrosis with Amostis. Wiggins America.
A little behind the scenes here. About a year ago, maybe more than that, the book The Real Dr. Anthony Fauci had been released by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and it kind of put him on the map, at least as far as I think middle America is concerned. He's been a D.C. guy for a long time, and Old Roy is here. Do you remember that we actually had RFK booked to be on Wiggins America?
Yes.
And about 15 minutes before he was scheduled, we had to record it. You know, we had to be in his schedule. I'm like, it's fine. We're small potatoes. And at the time, he hadn't announced anything. So I knew, if we can get this guy on, I don't think it'll be the last time we ever hear from RFK Jr. So let's get him now before he gets real big. And you had read the book, so I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. So about 15 minutes before RFK is scheduled to call in and be on the show, his publisher contacts us and the PR team or whatever, and they go, he's going to have to back out. And I knew at that moment, I think they knew this the whole time, that they'd reel you in with, hey, you can have RFK Jr. on your show. Well, now you can't, but the publisher can be on.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh. So we totally took it, hook, line, and sinker. We took the publisher. It was a good interview. It was long. I mean, we talked about the real Dr. Anthony Fauci, which is what put him on the map.
Yep.
But you've read the book.
Yes.
So now, in light of the week's news, just a real quick hit on, what do you think about this guy, RFK?
Well, I've got mixed feelings, and I've had arguments with friends and family who are conservatives who think of RFK as the kooky environmentalist, anti-vaxxer.
Yeah.
But if you read the book, he makes it very clear in the book that he's not an anti-vaxxer. He's an anti-untested vaxxer. And an anti the methodology that they use to push vaccines through. Anyway, different thing. We covered that already. Politically, I think he's more of a classic liberal, and that'll never change. But he has an opportunity, and he's been taking advantage of this, I think, in recent months and since he decided to run for president. That he's got the attention of some of the people on the right now because he was right on COVID. And so a lot of conservatives aren't diehard, never go against the party line. We're open to reasonable people talking about things without having to go all in on their political stance.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
And so I think the opportunity that he's been working on taking advantage of, or he should be if he's not doing it consciously, is that he's got a captive audience now on the other side. So there's an opportunity to bring the left back to a more classic liberal, which is where I think he lives and where he thinks the party should be. It's less about endorsing one side or the other and more about, can he save the party from itself?
Democrat Party.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, that's why you're here, is to give these crazy takes that nobody else is giving. I will say this. The thing about RFK that does fascinate me is that he represents this entire faction of people now, and hopefully these people are now going to switch to Trump. I mean, we'll see. But he represents this entire faction that they might still be pretty socially liberal, but they're like the classic anti-establishment people.
Yeah.
And that's why you have Tulsi Gabbards and people of that nature who are classically Democrats in policy position, but they're just anti-establishment. They don't trust the establishment. It's like the hippie generation. And you're like, that's Republicans now. And so we almost can set aside policy differences because we're focused on a bigger problem. And that bigger problem is this big monolithic establishment that exists, not just in America, but it's like the entire Western world. Mm-hmm. There's this thing that does not want to be disrupted. And the Republican Party sometimes is a part of that thing. But right. Donald Trump is not. And everybody knows that he's not. And RFK is not. And Tulsi Gabbard is not. And a lot of random Republicans, many, 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 many more Republicans are not a part of that than Democrats. And the Democrats who are not a part of that thing have become, I'm not really a Democrat anymore. So there's a big, interesting cultural, political shift that's happening that I think he represents, which is why I think he's fascinating. And glad to have him as part of this discussion now. But before we get to the end of the show, I wanted to leave a little bit of time here because we haven't done as much comedy, Roy.
Huh.
And I got the opportunity on the Annie Fry show to randomly play. It wasn't like a great venue for it because it was so sudden and random. But I had created a song a while ago. It was a challenge from somebody. I think it might have been Annie, but I don't remember because it was so long. It was like 6 or 8 months ago. To make a country song that was also very woke.
So that could be very interesting.
So while this kind of halfway debuted on the Annie Fry show last week, I figured I'd give it its full bore, its full stage right here at the end of this week's Wiggins America.
Awesome.
Hi there. Just want to let you know that I love you for who you are and for every single demographic box you might check. And I'm checking something else too. My privilege at the door. That's why. I'm singing through a paper straw to limit my abilities and curb my incapacity. Oh, I'm singing through a paper straw because I love this land and I love my paw. Anybody who would disagree with it, I presume their heart is full of hatred. I'm singing through a paper straw. No stone I will be casting, every stone I'll be romancing instead. I'm singing through a paper straw. Couple extra bucks will put my buddies in electrical trucks. Anybody who would disagree with it, I presume their heart is full of hatred. And I'm singing through a paper straw. Got a chip in my hand and a chip in my dog. Girl, what happened to dancing? Remember, I didn't mean to misgender you right there. Hey, do you love the song Singing Through a Paper Straw? Then book us to come to your city or mutually declared non-policed autonomous zone by visiting us online. Keep it sunny, baby. And remember, don't think too highly of your race.
Fibrosis with Amostis. Wiggins America.
A little behind the scenes here. About a year ago, maybe more than that, the book The Real Dr. Anthony Fauci had been released by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and it kind of put him on the map, at least as far as I think middle America is concerned. He's been a D.C. guy for a long time, and Old Roy is here. Do you remember that we actually had RFK booked to be on Wiggins America?
Yes.
And about 15 minutes before he was scheduled, we had to record it. You know, we had to be in his schedule. I'm like, it's fine. We're small potatoes. And at the time, he hadn't announced anything. So, I knew, oh, if we can get this guy on, I don't think it'll be the last time we ever hear from RFK Jr. So let's get him now before he gets real big. And you had read the book, so I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. So about 15 minutes before RFK is scheduled to call in and be on the show, his publisher contacts us and the PR team or whatever, and they go, he's going to have to back out. And I knew at that moment, I think they knew this the whole time, that they'd reel you in with, hey, you can have RFK Jr. on your show. Well, now you can't, but the publisher can be on.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh. So we totally took it, hook, line, and sinker. We took the publisher. It was a good interview. It was long. I mean, we talked about The Real Dr. Anthony Fauci, which is what put him on the map.
Yeah.
But you've read the book.
Yes.
So now, in light of the week's news, just a real quick hit on, what do you think about this guy, RFK?
Well, I've got mixed feelings, and I've had arguments with friends and family who are conservatives who think of RFK as the kooky environmentalist anti-vaxxer.
Yeah.
But if you read the book, he makes it very clear in the book that he's not an anti-vaxxer. He's an anti-untested vaxxer and an anti the methodology that they use to push vaccines through. Anyway, different thing. We covered that already. Politically, I think he's more of a classic liberal, and that'll never change. But he has an opportunity, and he's been taking advantage of this, I think, in recent months and since he decided to run for president, that he's got the attention of some of the people on the right now because he was right on COVID. And so a lot of conservatives aren't diehard, never go against the party line. We're open to reasonable people talking about things without having to go all in on their political stance.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
And so I think the opportunity that he's been working on taking advantage of, or he should be if he's not doing it consciously, is that he's got a captive audience now on the other side. So there's an opportunity to bring the left back to a more classic liberal, which is where I think he lives and where he thinks the party should be. It's less about endorsing one side or the other and more about, can he save the party from itself?
Democrat Party.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, that's why you're here, is to give these crazy takes that nobody else is giving. I will say this. The thing about RFK that does fascinate me is that he represents this entire faction of people now, and hopefully these people are now going to switch to Trump. I mean, we'll see. But he represents this entire faction that they might still be pretty socially liberal, but they're like the classic anti-establishment people.
Yeah.
And that's why you have Tulsi Gabbards and people of that nature who are classically Democrats in policy position, but they're just anti-establishment. They don't trust the establishment. It's like the hippie generation. And you're like, that's Republicans now. And so we almost can set aside policy differences because we're focused on a bigger problem, and that bigger problem is this big monolithic establishment that exists not just in America, but it's like the entire Western world. Mm-hmm. There's this thing that does not want to be disrupted. And the Republican Party sometimes is a part of that thing, but right. Donald Trump is not, and everybody knows that he's not. And RFK is not, and Tulsi Gabbard is not, and a lot of random Republicans, many, 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 many more Republicans are not a part of that than Democrats. And the Democrats who are not a part of that thing have become, I'm not really a Democrat anymore. So there's a big, interesting cultural political shift that's happening that I think he represents, which is why I think he's fascinating. And glad to have him as part of this discussion now. But before we get to the end of the show, I wanted to leave a little bit of time here because we haven't done as much comedy, Roy.
Huh.
And I got the opportunity on the Annie Fry show to randomly play. It wasn't like a great venue for it because it was so sudden and random. But I had created a song a while ago. It was a challenge from somebody. I think it might have been Annie, but I don't remember because it was so long. It was like 6 or 8 months ago. To make a country song that was also very woke.
So that could be very interesting.
So while this kind of halfway debuted on the Annie Fry show last week, I figured I'd give it its full bore, its full stage right here at the end of this week's Wiggins America.
Awesome.
Hi there. Just want to let you know that I love you for who you are. And for every single demographic box you might check. And I'm checking something else, too. My privilege at the door. That's why. I'm singing through a paper straw to limit my abilities and curb my incapacity. Oh, I'm singing through a paper straw
'cause I love this land and I love my paw. Anybody who would disagree with it, I presume their heart is full of hatred. I'm singing through a paper straw. No stone I will be casting, every stone I'll be romancing instead. I'm singing through a paper straw. Couple extra bucks will put my buddies in electrical trucks. Anybody who would disagree with it, I presume their heart is full of hatred. And I'm singing through a paper straw. Got a chip in my hand and a chip in my dog. Girl, what happened to dancing? Remember, I didn't mean to misgender you right there.
Hey, do you love the song Singing Through a Paper Straw? Then book us to come to your city or mutually declared non-policed autonomous zone by visiting us online. Keep it sunny, baby. And remember, don't think too highly of your race.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.